and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As the death toll mounts and starvation occurs, the Biden administration has made it clear repeatedly that there are no red lines for Israel. No red lines means a green light to continue genocide. Genocide is official Washington policy. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He's a legal and media analyst. In Hatfield, we have Joe Loria. He is the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com. And in Osaka, we cross to Saul Takahashi. He is a former deputy head of the office of the UN Human Rights Agency in occupied Palestine. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Joe first here. You're one of our premier media guys. I see that there is a real aversion to the G word in American media. Now, granted, ever since October 7th, we've seen more footage on mainstream American media, nothing like other alternative media. It's very sanitized. But they said really uncomfortable. Bernie Sanders, I'm really uncomfortable with that word. Why should they be uncomfortable with it? That's what it is. I mean, if it isn't genocide, what is it? Joe.
Well, if they're being honest with themselves, of course, that's what they would call it, but they aren't. Even after the International Court of Justice ruled that it's plausible that Israel's committing genocide, I mean, they had to report that, but in a way that left a lot of doubt that it's really genocide. I mean, you know it when you see it. This is clear. We at first, I shied away at Consortium News as the editor from using that word for a couple of weeks, and then it became so obvious that we were using it because that is what it is. And of course, it's protecting its cover for U.S. politicians, which, as you said in the opening, Peter, are greenlighting this genocide. And why are they doing that is the big question. I'm really not sure, except that there's huge amounts of money that go to American politicians, and there's very little Israel actually does for the United States and its interests, aside from the actual bribery, if we can call it that, of American officials to continue their support. Biden said that Israel cannot attack Rafah because 1.5 million refugees there living out in the open. But that's my red line. But whatever, if they do it, no matter what, I'm with Israel. I mean, it's absurd what's going on. And I have to say his idea of a pier, which they're starting to build, this 1,800-mile-long causeway, is a evil, cynical stunt to get him elected because he knows that his own party is opposing his policy on Gaza. They want a ceasefire. 70% of Democrats in a recent poll want a ceasefire. He's losing this election. So he wants to be able to continue to support the genocide while making it look like he's doing something to help the people of Gaza. And no one should believe that at all for a moment.
Yeah, dropping ready-made food and bombs simultaneously. Get your head around that. Saul, let me go to you. I want to go towards your expertise. You know occupied Palestine. What's the purpose of human rights and international law now? I mean, the West likes to take credit for inventing it and shaming other countries into enforcing it, but the West now has completely turned its back on it. So what's it worth?
Yeah, well, I'm asking myself the same thing every day, unfortunately. I kind of wonder what I've committed my entire career to. But look, I mean, I think what's happening now is, like you just said, I mean, the double standards of hypocrisy of the West when it comes to human rights and international law in general has just been exposed so blatantly, so clearly, that it's just got unacceptable for the populace, not only for the populace of pretty much the entire world, but also for a lot of the governments outside of the West. You know, when you just think of the Ukraine, for example, I mean, if you just read the Western mainstream corporate media, you know, you get the sense that the entire world is together, you know, they're lined up together with us against the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at you have to do is look at a map of the world of the countries that are really, imposing sanctions on Russia. And it's very few. It really is only the West and a couple of others. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You know, the hypocrisy and double standards are just so blatant and so obvious that, the people of the world are just sick of it. They've had enough. And, the social media and the other kind of the video clips and the pictures that we've seen coming from Palestine, they just expose everything even more. You know, it's impossible now for the United States, for the West to hide what's been going on. It really is just, it's a terrible situation. It's a situation where really the whole idea of international law, the whole idea of international norms that everybody must abide by, are really being put into question now. And it's, you know, it's nobody's fault except the U.S.'s and the West.
Absolutely right. We're more or less on this program the same age. But it's always been kind of intuitive, particularly in the West and the United States, that Israel's an exception. And, you know, there's not a great explanation for it. It's just, you know, they are different, okay? But they can't be when the stakes are so high here, Lionel.
You know, I was thinking, gentlemen, if I were to use a new term, for example, instead of saying Orwellian, dystopian, doublespeak, we have this new speak, which I'm trying to come up with a word. And as you know, Peter, I'm live from the Fishbowl, which is here in the West. But let me explain to you the intellectual kata, if you will, that's done, especially on supposedly conservative news platforms. It works like this. I'm the guest. You're somebody with a conscience or somebody who dares to say the G word. And I say to you as follows. Number one, do you recognize Hamas as a terrorist organization?
No, here we go.
Number two, you recognize October the 7th as a terrorist act? Number three, does Israel have the right to defend itself? Now, and that's it. And with that, I mean, all hell breaks loose. But you respond with this. Excuse me. Do you recognize this, or do you believe this particular activity on the part of Israel is genocide? Wait a minute. And then you say, hold it. You just cited, and most people, most Western folks will cite international organizations to say, Hamas is terrorism. This is a terrorist act. The UN said this. Fine. You said, however, the ICJ said this. The UN said this. No, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
So you pick the particular terms. And I will tell you, genocide is a word that many people here in the West, if not all, do not understand. We're not asking you to use your own version of what it is, cattle cars, Holocaust, World War II. It is a definitional operative word in a convention that is being used, as is apartheid, as is ethnic cleansing.
Well, I mean, Lionel, you're absolutely spot on right. But the word, the idea of genocide is well known. I don't think we can dismiss that. But putting Israel and genocide in the same sentence, that's what bothers people. Joe, you react to that, okay? Of course, genocide is wrong, but go ahead, Joe.
Well, the language is very clear in the Genocide Convention that Lionel just referred to, that it is about destroying in whole or in part. And that's an important part of this. You don't have to kill everyone there, even a majority, a part of a national, ethnic, or racial, or religious group, and or to make deliberately inflict on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction, whole or part. If anybody doesn't see that that's what's happening in Gaza now, they're not watching. Why is it carved out? Because Israel has, since its founding in 1948, not only practiced slow motion genocide, certainly ethnic cleansing in order to establish the state, but it has had, based on the guilt of the Holocaust, because the West did nothing to stop the Holocaust, to turn away ships of Jewish refugees. There was an enormous amount of guilt there, number one. There was an interest in perhaps having a European colony in an Arab land, although the United States, and look at FDR, he sat down with King Saud on the ship in the Suez Canal and made the deal that the U.S. and Saudi Arabia still live under, which is oil for the U.S., security guarantees to Saudi Arabia. So did they really need Israel as a aircraft carrier there, as so many people say it is, a U.S. aircraft carrier? That's questionable. But certainly Israel has gotten away with murder and now with genocide without really trying. That's exactly what the American leadership, particularly in Congress, but also Biden, are doing. And it's really still a mystery to me why they cannot speak out and tell Israel to stop this. Biden needs to pick up the phone, stop this. It would guarantee his election, most likely. The Democratic Party, the voters are going against him. They can't stand what they're seeing. As you said, Peter, before we started this show, that our humanity is being destroyed here by watching this. It is degrading everyone's humanity. And Democrats are seeing this now. They are seeing young people are out in the street. They blocked the road on the way to the Capitol for that State of the Union address. And I'm quite proud, actually, to see American people protesting this. They are politically aware of what's going on. There's some hold that Israel has on the American political leadership. It can only come down to the money that they give
them. It's called corruption. It's just pure out and out corruption. So, I mean, another thing that has been revealed in all of this with the assault on Gaza, the genocide that's being committed, is Western racism. Because Palestinians just don't rate. You know, they're not worthy victims. And when you put that into the context of the whole woke nonsense in the Western world, now everything starts to short circuit. Saul.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's absolutely no question about that. I mean, Palestinians just don't count. Palestinian lives don't count. And, you know, Palestinians have been dehumanized in the West through the corporate media and through statements of the political elite, you know, over and over and over for decades now, that, you know, people just, well, you know, you have a lot of people, thousands of people going out on the streets demonstrating, and that's a really heartening sign. But certainly within the corridors of power in most of the Western countries, it's just, you know, people just shrug their shoulders. And again, you know, it's the double standards. I mean, even if we go back to the Holocaust, you know, look, the European powers had been committing genocides in colonies, you know.
Yeah.
For you know, donkey's years up till then. And the only reason this was like a really big deal was because it took place in Europe. And because the victims sort of looked like us.
That's right.
I mean, at the time, you know, in many countries, Jewish people were not looked upon or not treated as white people, but still they looked like us and there was a sort of sense of affinity or them being close to us. At least they were closer to us than, you know, black Africans or other people. So, you know, that's again, just goes to show the double standards. You know, again, I'm an international lawyer. I've spent my entire career in international law. But, you know, we have to remember that international law has, if not racist origins, but has always been applied in a racist way.
Saul, I have to jump in here, gentlemen. Yeah. I have to go to a hard break here. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Saul and Osaka. Right before we went to the break, we were talking about how the West has really revealed its racism towards the world by not rating Palestinians as worthy victims. Continue, please.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I think some of the other guests were talking about how Israel is treated with kid gloves. And it really is amazing to me, not only how in D.C., but also in international fora like the U.N., you know, Israel is treated special. It's somehow there's this idea that we have to be really careful when we're talking about Israel, because the only way we're going to get them to do the right thing is if we show them that we're not, you know, biased against them, that we're not inherently against them, and that, you know, to treat them with kid gloves. And you see this with a lot of the statements that some UN agencies have been putting out since October. You know, I'm not sort of criticizing any sort of particular person or the like, but, you know, some of the statements you have to go, again, you know, treating God, what's happening in Gaza completely like a humanitarian issue. They're talking about, you know, Gazans dying, Gazans starving to death, Gazans, you know, Gazans being killed, yes, but without the subject. Like, you have to go two pages to the very end to finally find the word Israel, that Israel is inflicting.
Well, it's always 10 people died last night in Gaza. We don't know how they died. We don't know who killed them.
Yes.
They're never given any kind of agency or description here. You know, Lionel, another thing that has happened in spades since October 7th is the throwing around the A word, anti-Semitism. It doesn't land the way it used to. At least the way I've been watching it now, people just are shrugging that off right now.
Well, we had a guest 1 week who talked about metal fatigue as to the term. It's been used for so often for so long that it's brittle and it doesn't hold anymore. in our country, we have racism, we have conspiracy theory, Putin apologist, you name it. And remember one thing, you only get a label if you're, what you're saying is correct. You only take flack when you're over the target. Yeah. If you have some specious idea that has nothing to do with anything, nobody will give you the time of day. But if you hit on a nerve, and by the way, gentlemen, I think I love the way that we always talk about language and the like. My favorite term now is red line. Now, I thought red line was red, like stop sign, red. Red line, I think, means emphasis, like italics or something. It means something else. It doesn't mean what it means. And also, we have a lot of people, and again, remember, you should have on my Chiron here, view from the fishbowl. If I walked with you to Times Square right now and said, tell me the difference between Judaism, Jewish, Israel, Zionism, Zionist, they will look at you and they'll say, I know they're connected, and I know that I stay away from that. It's almost like a radioactive kryptonite. I just don't go there. And also, this past week when we had the Academy Awards, they're focusing in on a particular lapel pin or something which dealt with ceasefire or something. And again, even the left betrays its own by saying, there they go again. Excuse me, you are they. If they were to say something about some transgender appreciation, that would be fine. But all of a sudden, this way of thinking is despotic and lunacy if they were to ever veer from the accepted reason to either stay away from the subject, don't bring it up, or be very careful lest you, especially when, by the way, Jews and Israelis are called anti-Semitic, which I think is the greatest of them all in terms of idiocy.
You know, Joe, the powers that be, the neoliberal order, they really like to pick on the word populist, populist left, populist right. Well, I throw it right back at them. They're the authoritarian populists. You know, Lionel just described it right there. And that is the poverty of the situation for a lot of us here, is because language has been intentionally confusing. Okay, Lionel already mentioned, you know, Israel, Zionism, Jews, okay? So somehow they're all connected. They're all very different, actually, okay? And we should be open about it, okay? And proclaim it. And this is what, you know, so many people are hesitating to do that. Not yourself, not ourselves here. But there's still that fear. But as I started with my question, the term anti-Semitism doesn't land the way it used to, particularly when you're talking to American Jews, European Jews that are against this genocide. Joe.
No, that's the most extraordinary thing maybe about this entire event that we're going through, is that it's no longer taboo to say the kinds of things you used to say. And I think more and more people are understanding that there's a huge difference between Judaism and Zionism. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Joe Biden has said that himself on numerous occasions. What does that tell you? Zionism is a secular political movement. It's nothing to do. The old joke is that the Zionists are atheists who think God gave them the promised land. So they're using Judaism in that way, but they're not going by the values of Judaism. And many Jews are saying that now. If there's a silver lining in any of this, it's that it's no longer taboo to criticize what Israel's doing. And more people in the West are seeing that now. I'm up here in South Yorkshire because of the commemoration of the miners' strike of 40 years ago. And Art Descargill, the head of the miners' union, gave a speech. And he started with a five-minute attack on Israel for being genocidal and fascist and supporting the Gazans. And these miners, who've been on the dole almost all their lives since 40 years, were standing and cheering. The people, average working people, understand what's going on now. And Israel can't hide behind that anymore. And I think politicians are going to start losing elections because of their support for their complicity with genocide. There are officials like Lloyd Austin going into a congressional hearing, and Code Pink is there calling him a genocide attacker. This is extraordinary scenes that we're seeing here. They, if they have any conscience left, any of these Western leaders, they know that what they're doing is the worst thing they've ever done in their life, and they're going to pay politically for it, and yet they won't move. They won't stop it. Biden could stop it with a phone call.
One way or another, for millions of people, genocide is on the ballot. If they like it or not, it's there. That just, you know, that's a game changer, okay? That's people will not participate. So another thing, you know, it's already been mentioned a little bit here, but, you know, Zionism is a nationalism. So it's ethno-nationalism. It's ethno, okay? I thought the West didn't like that. Isn't ethno-nationalism wrong? Oh, it doesn't. It's not wrong if it's in Ukraine or Israel. Okay, we got our ducks lined up here. Go ahead, Saul.
Yeah, well, like you say, I mean, it's just the double standards once again. I think, Joe, that joke that you were thinking of was that 70% of Israelis don't believe in God, but, you know, they do believe that God promised them Palestine. But, yeah, I mean, that's what Israel is. It's an ethnocratic project. It's a settler colonial project that is based on genocide. The entire goal has always been, from the get-go, the stealing of Palestinian land, the driving of Palestinians out from that land, and you know, the colonization of that land. That's always been very, very clear and stated very clearly by the Zionists from the very early days to the current Israeli government. You know, at the time, late 19th century, this wasn't like dirty words. These weren't dirty words, you know, colonization and like that. And
no, they were aspirational
oh,
words,
yeah.
Yes. Keep going.
Exactly, and they had no compunctions about sort of, you know, treating the, you know, describing the Palestinians as basically savages that would be grateful for Western civilization, and if they weren't, well, we just, you know, we kill them all or we just drive them out. That was the whole idea. So, you know, this is all really connected with Western imperialism, and that's why, like you say, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing if the Israelis do it or if the Ukrainians do it or if our allies do it, you know, then it's perfectly fine.
You know, Lionel, how is, in your environs, how is the Jewish community responding to all of this here? Talk about the divisions, talk about what the discourse.
I certainly can't speak for them, but there is a kind of a tacit agreement, without going too much into the specifics, if that makes any sense. You know, Peter, whenever you and I speak, we always go back to our generation, and I'm going to throw a name out for you that maybe we're the only one, or you might know, Sasheen Littlefeather. Now, during the Academy Awards one year, when Marlon Brando won,
I remember,
Sasheen,
yes.
Right. Remember also Vanessa Redgrave, yep, who spoke about Zionism. All right, but Sasheen Littlefeather was this. By the way, turns out later she might not have been a Native American, but anyway, she showed up. And she accepted or refused to accept it because of the treatment of the Native Americans or the Indians. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood was very sensitive. They didn't do anything, but they said, you know, you're right, the way we portray Native Americans. And they really cared about it. Okay, jump to today. If Sasheen Littlefeather had come out, if she had the wrong lapel button, said basically the same thing. And don't forget, we're the only country in the world that came here and thought that we discovered a country that was already inhabited by other people. This is the arrogance. So we are very, very topical. We're very faddish with our sensibilities. We recognize you, this is terrible. But when it comes to this particular thing, let me just give you this very simple statement. The Middle East in particular, and this Israel and Palestine, is something that Americans don't understand. They are in a fight for their lives, and we just had best kind of stay out, support them, and go on with our other things because they know best. And let's just, we have an election coming up, and nothing to see here, children. Move on like
the problem
with jiggling keys.
Yes, and Miss Littlefeather, she ended up in Playboy magazine. I don't remember the issue, but I do.
I leave it to you, sir.
I still remember. Okay. Joe, it's good that we talk about genocide. Make people feel uncomfortable about the word. And that's how, and that's why I'm very forceful in using it. You've got to react. You cannot be indifferent, Joe.
No, you can't. This is a referendum on who you are as a human being, basically, how you see this event, let alone the politicians. You know, about Native Americans, I mean, it's a perfect parallel of what's going on in Palestine right now. It's been going on since the 1930s, but certainly since 1948, the gradual destruction of a people and the stealing of their land. It's exactly what happened in the United States. There were people already living there, even if Israelis say there was no one there, there was a thriving culture there. This parallel is perfect to understand, which is probably why American leaders who don't acknowledge it was a genocide of Native Americans are supporting this genocide. These are two genocides, and the two countries that are participating in them are joined together in a way that, again, I don't fully understand why, but they're going to pay a price. as they're continuously seeing that this that they are supporters of clearly a genocide, and I expect the ICJ will eventually rule that this was a genocide, but it'll be too late, of course, because it'll be completed.
But the statements have been made about the plausibility of it. That sticks, and that is historic here. Gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in New York, Hatfield and Osaka, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.